Mind the Music Biz, a Raised Rowdy podcast hosted by Peyton Heben.
Guys, welcome back to another episode of Behind the Music Biz, a Raised Rowdy podcast. I'm your host, Peyton Heben. This is episode 16. Joined by my buddy, Sean McHenry. He's the coordinator and day-to-day manager at Extended Play Music Group, day-to-day managing up-and-coming artist Matt Schuster. And he's a former booking agent assistant at WME. So, Sean, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, dude. I'm Absolutely. Excited to be here.
Yeah, it's been, thanks for coming on last minute. It's been tough. So I just started full time at Riverhouse. So now I'm in office. Mm-hmm. I used to shoot my podcast in the morning during the weekday at any time.
Yeah.
But now it's been tough to schedule guests with my schedule.
Yeah.
So thanks for coming on last minute.
Yeah. I mean, anything on the weekends, I think, is a lot easier now having kind of dipped into this management side a little bit where your schedule opens up. You don't have to be kind of at a desk all the time. So anything on the weekends, I'm like, yeah, I got the time for, and it's nice. So
tell me a little bit about your journey to Nashville and how you grew up, where you grew up. And
so I'm from a town just south of the Twin Cities called Farmington. As it sounds, it's a pretty, I would say, average size. It's about 15 to 20. It's grown now, so I think about maybe 25,000 people. But there's a few farm families pulling into our high school. You have cows on both sides of the entryways. So we were the school that got made fun of being the hicks and the rednecks and things like that. But yeah, grew up in Farmington. I knew I kind of wanted to go into entertainment, but ended up going to Winona State out there, just a state school kind of on the Mississippi River, right borders Wisconsin, and had an internship at one of the venues in Minneapolis. Didn't get much out of it, so kind of stopped doing that and was trying to make money at the time. And just about a month in or 2 months into that, started serving, and then kind of took that the rest of my college career. But after that, I was working in logistics and absolutely hating it. I just knew I wanted to do something else, something bigger. And my sister had moved down here to do chiropractic and open up a chiropractic office. And she was always kind of like, hey, why don't you just move down here and do the music business thing and maybe go back to school for music and just come to Nashville. And throughout high school, I dipped into the country music scene a little bit more. I grew up on the hip hop and R&B and 50 Cent, Nelly and Chris Brown and all that stuff. So when I got into high school, it was a lot more of the country music. Sam Hunt kind of came onto the scene and it changed a little bit more of the sound, became more accessible to what I was interested in, and kind of dove in that way. I mean, growing up, we had our Gretchen Wilson and Rascal Flatts and things that Martina McBride, my mom and aunt and things like that would listen to, but my dad wasn't a big music head, so I got a lot of what I listened to growing up from them. But yeah, so I ended up basically just making the move down to Nashville. Went back to school. Luckily it was during COVID, so we were already working from home at that time and was able to take my job from working from home down here. They let me stay on and was just working full time, going to school for full time, and did that for about 2 years. Worked in a couple internships there, so it's just been a long 4 years. I've been here now since 2020 and kind of getting now to the position where I'm getting more comfortable and kind of have my crew of connections and my network and things like that. So it's been fun.
So you went to Winona State, you said?
Yep.
And what was your major in there?
So that was just a music, or not a music business, business admin. And then I kind of minored in management.
Okay.
At some point I knew I wanted to run a company of some sort or be like a CEO, and I knew I had
entrepreneurship route. Yeah.
Something along that line. So I knew management was going to be at some point a part of what I wanted to do. And even made myself take a bunch of like public speaking classes because I was like, a CEO has to be able to talk in front of people. So that's something that I knew I kind of wanted to go into. The music side didn't really come until a bit after, but yeah.
That's usually how it goes, honestly. I feel like it's such a unique, I mean, industry. You know, you talked about how you did logistics. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could have a degree in anything, go to school, we've known it for 4 years, and graduate with a degree in business, and then go get a logistics job pretty easily.
Yeah.
Music, it's like you're going to have to work your ass off and probably work a logistics job just to get into the music business.
Yeah, exactly. No, and knowing that I was coming down to Nashville, I was applying to places, and even with my the business management degree, you don't get any looks because you got Belmont and MTSU down here of people and enough people applying that have music business degrees or some sort of kind of focus in the music industry. And I don't think my application was getting looked at all. So I knew that in my move, it would probably be something I would have to do, go back to music business school. But I also learned a ton about the industry that someone from, I think maybe Minnesota, small town, I knew a lot about the music industry, but you realize that kind of the depth of it when you get here and start diving in. There's a lot more to the different verticals of publishing, label management. Yeah. Like, there's just so many different things and jobs within there that you kind of start figuring out different knowledge base of that.
The best advice I was ever given by someone in this industry, I can't remember who it was, but it was, they said they found success in the business by being a Swiss Army knife, like being able to do everything. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't matter if you're in publishing or if you're in management, like knowing about tour management and label side of things and just publicity, like being able to do all these different things where you don't need to outsource a bunch and you can kind of like be there, because then you're always useful.
Yeah.
So that's why I always, like, because I went to Florida Gulf Coast, I have no music business history within my education, so I just had to be a sponge when I came to town and just listen to podcasts and figure it out that way.
Yeah.
But so you ended up moving to Nashville to be with your sister here. So you went back to school, you graduated 4 years Winona with a bachelor's degree in business admin.
Yep.
And then you went to MTSU in Murfreesboro. For another 4 years, right?
Luckily, since I had all my gen eds and things like that, it was just a second bachelor's.
Oh, true. So it'd be like a master's, I guess.
Yeah. So it was another 2 years and it was all online just with COVID and things going on. So it was a lot easier. I kind of understood what I was getting myself into. Having been to college the first time, you kind of, not that college is like a game, but once you figure out how the professors work, it's like, okay, I know how to do the homework. I can do it efficiently. It's kind of just doing the work. But yeah, in that I learned a lot. And like you said about being kind of that Swiss Army knife, there was, when I went to Winona, there was videographers that I was a fan of, photographers I was fans of, where I ended up getting a video camera and just ended up learning how to edit video. And then coming down here and doing some of my music business classes, kind of learned how to start doing more Photoshop stuff and Illustrator stuff and creating posters. And it was just a lot of kind of those fun artsy classes where, like, tour marketing or stuff like that, where I got to pick up some of those extra skills and the tools of how to promote artists and things like that. And then I think one of the first days of classes, one of my professors said, this town isn't always about the talent. Like, it is a very who you know. And then she kind of said it like three times throughout that first day of like, it's who you know. It's who you know. And I was like, if it's who you know, then I need to get out. Like, I need to be up in Nashville. I need to start meeting people. I came here with the goal to like make this thing happen. And I knew that kind of just chatting with her and talking to other people, they're like, it's your connections, it's your network, it's who you know. And that was something I immediately just like, I got to get to Nashville and just grind.
Yeah.
Start at that.
Well, it's funny you say that, because on every single episode I've had, networking has been like I try and not necessarily steer away from it, but I try and like expand it to other things. So people that listen, like can learn other things right. about how to get in the business and what helps and what works.
Yeah.
But it's like, I mean, if I was taking notes on it, I would just be circling the word network for the entire podcast.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, it's so important. It's like the number one thing without a doubt.
Yeah.
It's what got me this far in my career and seems it got you this far.
Yeah. And I think there's ways that if you're looking to get into the industry, there's ways to do networking. I wouldn't say correctly, but just smart. Like there's a lot of tools that I don't think people use when they're coming into the industry. They're trying to do like a lot of the cold calls or like, I don't even know how some people like reach out over LinkedIn, which is such a LinkedIn and in the music business, I don't think is massive. It's not a massive tool that allows music industry. People are like, let me check my LinkedIn. But no, I mean, there are things of just going on Music Row. A lot of people, if they get promoted, you can see they'll put their emails and, in doing that, you can figure out who the other people are's emails in that company based on how that it's set up. So there was just ways that I was trying to go about meeting the people within the industry that I wanted to either work for or just get knowledge from. And then kind of just building out those mentors is, I think, how people should try to build out their network and just grow if they want to come here and come into the city. It is though, just networking is the main thing. But it's easier said when you're living in Nashville. Right, yeah. I think it's harder when you're coming here to kind of build that, especially if you want to move here and do the music industry thing. It's hard when you're not here. Yeah. And that's something I knew that at some point I wanted to go into the music industry. My sophomore year of college at Winona, I wanted to go to LA because I was going to get a music business degree at Long Beach. Mm-hmm. And luckily, that did not end up working out. I don't think I would fit well in LA.
I was going to say
right now,
because that's a whole different music scene.
Oh, yeah.
So it would have conditioned you to know Hollywood
right.
and the pop music scene. And
exactly.
Versus Nashville, it's like night and day.
Yeah. And I wouldn't say people are more accessible here, but I think if you're smart about it, it's a little bit easier to get in the same rooms as some of the people that you want to be with. And
yeah.
I had a goal when I moved here. It was, I want to work for Sam Hunt's management. It was like, that was the goal.
Mm-hmm.
And then within my year-iversary of moving here of August 2020, by August 2021, I had lined up with them that I was going to be their fall intern. And it was like within a year, I was able to schedule that and get that lined up. Luckily, it was during COVID. So a lot of management was like kind of twiddling their thumbs. And what do we do during this time to make things happen? So that a lot of their timing was free and able to talk to people. And
right.
Sam's manager had went to MTSU. So he was like another MTSU guy, like, sweet, let's hop on the phone. And what should have been a 15-minute conversation turned into like a 45-minute conversation. And you just kind of build the relationships that way, I think, is the smarter way to go about things. But
yeah, I think that's a really good point that hasn't been brought up before in the networking conversation, is that there are right and wrong ways to go about it. I think we've talked a lot about going out and to Live Oak or Red Door and kind of just like recognizing faces, going up and networking that way.
Mm-hmm.
But people think, oh, I'm going out to the bar to network, I got to get pissed drunk
right.
and like just be like obnoxious. I have to go out all the time and drink. And then you kind of go down a little hole there and people start to see that. Mm-hmm. And when you're coming up drunk, trying to network, it's like, it's a turnoff for people.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, I'll never forget Matt Burrill had the outside, I think I might've told you this, had the outside the round, Whale Tail Takeover.
Yeah. Yeah.
This was back in early 2022. This was right before I had moved. And it was a shit ton of people playing that I wanted to go see. And I didn't know anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm there and I'm pissed drunk, like really, really drunk. Just like going around talking to people. I remember I ended up like, I was sitting back there talking to somebody and Ko Wetzel came up and I'm just like trying to talk to Ko.
Yeah.
And it was like this whole
not a bad dude to be wasted around, but
right,
still,
yeah.
You don't want to come off a certain way.
He was matching my energy with that. But it was like the people around me saw that, and they saw this kid right. that's young, that's trying to get into the business, but acting like a fool.
Yeah.
And that was like, I kind of had this come to Jesus moment after that. I was like, yeah, that's not happening ever again.
Yeah.
It's like, if I want to build a reputation, you can't be going out and getting drunk.
100%.
And I think also the point of reaching out to people like LinkedIn and stuff, there's mm-hmm. a certain way to go about it, or Instagram DM.
Yep.
It's a lot of like, let's go grab coffee.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go grab lunch. Like on me, like we did, it was like, instead of reaching out, and cause I had known at the time, I didn't know you had left WME.
Yeah.
So instead of being like, hey dude, do you have any openings to, do you think WME can look at my artists?
Yeah. Right.
Instead of just like some shit like that.
Yeah.
It was like a
being super forward.
Yeah. And, but like people listening, like probably like, oh, that's stupid. No, that happens all the time.
Yeah. There's definitely people who do that. Or if I'm out, or when I was out, when I was at WME, and, not that it's something you would try to avoid telling people, but like, especially when you're at Red Door and you have a lot of singer-songwriters who are trying to find an agent or just kind of make their way, and they find out, what do you do? And it's like, oh, I work at WME. And then the conversation, the demeanor, everything changes of like, oh, and like kind of in your face. So it's just funny that that's something for sure where people are like, they'll be very forward and be like, can you show them my music? Can you show your agent? And it's like, yeah, send it to me. Like,
yeah. Never opens
send me your demos. No, there are times where there's been a few people that I get their music and I actually do think they're good. And I think they're at a point where I was willing to kind of share their music, and you're able to kind of be that gatekeeper, I think, to a lot of the people in town. So it was cool to be on that end of things, but also you do got to be careful when you're with a company like WME and any of those big companies, especially in the music industry, because like you said, the reputation is really all you have. And as soon as you kind of lose that, it's a small town, your name spreads.
Oh, yeah.
You don't
want wildfire.
Yeah. You don't want to be in that position where you're trying to gain the trust back of a city. So there were a couple instances at WME that I ran into some of that stuff. But luckily, everything's good at this point. At least I think it is. But it's just you got to be careful when you're coming up in Nashville. And like I said, it's small. So people talk and people know and your name can easily get tossed out in things that shouldn't be.
Yeah. And I think a point to piggyback off that is just because you don't know somebody doesn't mean they don't know you.
Exactly.
So like you and I didn't know each other at all until we went to lunch the other day.
Yeah.
but we had like heard each other's names, you know, like
right.
I started working with Hayes mm-hmm. and he had brought your name up. Well, I was on the phone with Trevor Perkins.
Yep.
A few weeks ago or whatever. Maybe it was longer than that, but he had brought your name up. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh man, I know that name because Cody brought him up. And I was like, okay, that's the second time I've heard his name. Then I was on the phone with Hunter and he was like, he said, oh, my old roommate. And I was like, dude, that's like, the third time I've heard his name in like a week.
You're like, who is this kid?
Yeah. So then I just hit you up. I was like, let's just.
Yeah.
Oh, I think I had met you officially at Live Oak that one night.
Yeah, I think we bumped into each other at Live Oak. But I think it's nice when you bump into people and we're both trying to do the same thing of just young people in Nashville who are like headstrong at making whatever we're doing work. And I think I immediately caught that from you. I'm like, oh, okay, this dude knows what he knows, the grind, he's head down. And so it was nice, but yeah, it's just funny how a lot of times the people that I meet, like I said, I think you need to be intentional about where you want to be if you want to meet certain people. And there were so many people that I followed on Instagram when I moved to town, or kind of just, I wouldn't say keep tabs or like stalked, but you definitely know where people are going to be based on like, if it's a certain publishing writer's round, like, you know what mm-hmm. people from that publisher might be there. So it was just doing a lot of that. And it's just, I had seen your name and that's how I kind of got a hold of Trevor. And I knew about Cody from, I think you, but I knew Cody's name. And then I was like, oh yeah, he's managed by Peyton. And I had heard your name get brought up a couple times too. So it's just funny how we end up bumping into each other.
Yeah. And the whole, like, not knowing each other, but, like, we saw each other and we were like, oh, like, we know, we mutuals on social media and whatever. Like, I used to listen to podcasts, Ray's Rowdy specifically, like, it was Brio's podcast, and then Nick and Kurt.
Nicky T.
I would listen to their shit all the time, and DM Monday podcast with Trey Lewis. Shout out, Trey. I listened to, even if it was artists or music business people, whoever it was, I would, like, listen for names that they would drop.
Right.
And I was like, well, they're in that Ray's Rowdy circle. They're going to be at Live Oak.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially for Ray's Rowdy events. So I would go there. I met so many people. Like, I would hear their name on the podcast, go look at their Instagram, and then, like, recognize them in person.
Right.
And so I would go up and shake their hand. That's kind of like, we had seen each other on social media enough to, like, that's that person. Let's go shake each other's hand.
Yeah. It was like when I saw you, I was like, Peyton? And you're like, Sean? And I was like, all right, what's up?
Yeah.
But no, that's like, even with Nicky T and Matt, like, both those fellows, I mean, when I was at WME, I think I had been there for only like 6 months. And I think the structure of WME, I mean, you got to work your way up. I luckily was able to kind of start as a floater, but even before that, it's like mailroom reception, ticketing, like floater, assistant. And so there's just a lot of steps, and I was able to come in as a floater. And immediately,
which means what?
So basically any work that the assistants don't have time for, they'll pass to the floaters. So you're kind of working under all the agents, because any work that is overflowing at a certain desk, like, they'll send it to the floater and be like, hey, can you help out with this?
Gotcha.
So I was just doing a lot of extra work, but you're also kind of supposed to be seen, not heard, kind of a thing, like, know your place. And being me, I mean, I was like, what can I do to, like, make myself stand out? What do I do? And kind of using the effect of, like, I work at WME. I was able to just go up to Matt and be like, yo, I work at WME. It'd be sick if we could do like a WME writers round, and, you know, put some of our like up and coming acts who maybe don't have a pub deal or are looking for a label, and, you know, they have the agency side, but they're missing the other pieces, and just get them on a round that would be WME focused. And Matt was like, that'd be sick, dude. Like, we, me, you, Nicky T, like, we can all kind of make this thing happen. I had a buddy, Austin, at WME who was helping at the time too, and he was already on a desk. So it was like, I had a little bit on my side to help out, and we were able to just, I think that was in October. I started in June. By October, we were already like thinking of ways that how we're going to do this WME writers round.
Cause, like, it happened.
Yeah. With,
I was there.
Yeah.
Right? I did not know you did that.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So sick. But that was me, Austin, and then, Matt and Nick. And we started talking that October, and I think we ended up throwing it in April of last year.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one of those things where I was on a desk by the time it happened, but when the ideas were being thrown around, and it's a small office as well, so everyone's kind of like, what's this writer's round that, like, this floater and this assistant are trying to do, and who are they, and why do they think they can do this, kind of a thing. I don't think it was as judgy, but it was just one of those things that was really cool where I was able to work with the fellas, and we were able to have like a super successful event. Yeah. And a lot of the agents kind of reached out and were like, congrats, like, you had a great lineup and you guys figured it out. Cause there's a lot of, like, even the agreement stuff and contracting stuff that WME has to make with the venue, just with either security or any insurance or anything like that, was all stuff that had to go through us. And, they kind of put it on our shoulders, what we wanted, and it was a lot of fun and we learned a lot. But it was one of those cool things where I got to work with the guys and, just kind of be around the like-minded people, where any, like, the Ray's Rowdy guys, they're, you all, like, everyone really wants to be successful in it. And I think it shows. And when you get like-minded people together like that, it's fun to see, like, what we can all put on and what we can do.
Who was all on that, lineup? I don't really remember, but I remember
we had Brian Martin, Sean Stemmeley, like, Lainey Gardner, Rowan Ash. I'm trying to think of the names on it.
They do a live podcast from there with Lainey too.
Yeah. So that was the fellow's first, live podcast that they did. And they were like, we kind of want to try this out. And I was like, great. Like, let's do it. So the first hour was a podcast with Lainey and Brian Martin. And then we ended, we started the rounds after that, but we had probably like 10 agents from WME come out to that. And it was just cool to have like all that support. And I had been going around and things. Yeah. So you kind of see the audience size throughout the night. Mm-hmm. And to have an audience that kind of stayed throughout the remainder of the night, I was like, nice.
Yeah.
Like, this is sweet. But yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, I remember being there. I did not know you did that. Did Kinsley play that?
I don't think so.
I saw her play live a couple times, but I didn't know. She recently signed a WME. Do you know who I'm talking about?
I don't think so. Is she?
Yeah, it's she. Kinsley. She's like a 20-year-old girl or something. I had seen her play at Rounds a couple times, and then I saw on her Instagram or something she signed a WME.
Okay. Is it just Kinsley?
Kinsley.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe it wasn't maybe it was a Nothing Fancy takeover. It was something. She played something, and I was like, there was a lot of people there for her.
Yeah. So, well, and that was the thing, too, because there was a lot of artists that me and Austin had been working with and are not working with, but we were fans of, yeah, as a like songwriter or artist in town, but they weren't tied to WME. So we were like, maybe we can put them on like the first round. That way that some of the agents can like get a nice view of people that we're looking at or that some of us around the office have our eyes on. And that immediately got shut down. They were like, if it's not a WME artist, like it's a no go. And we were like, oh, okay. But yeah, so I'm not sure what round she would have been on.
Before because I do want to get more into the WME thing, kind of how you worked your way up and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But you were at MV2. Is that Sam's or what is that?
No, so they're boutique publishing house, I think. And I think you would call it. And they also have a Lost City Records as kind of their record label. So they do publishing, management, label services. And I was looking for an internship at the time, and I think I applied to probably 20 places, whether like Concord, Live Nation, so many. MV2 was the only one who got back to me, and it was 2 weeks after internships should have started. And she was like, hey, sorry for kind of the late reply, but we'd love to have you if you want to come have an interview. And I was like, yes, like I'll be there ASAP. Knowing nothing about who they were or where it was, I end up going to the interview and it's on Music Row.
I get
and
my haircut like, right next to it, the Moose.
Yeah, Moose.
Yeah.
Place was expensive, but super shout out the Moose.
it's worth it. They do me up real good.
Yeah, I bet. And so I get there and I'm like, oh, this is on Music Row. Like, this would be a sick spot to start and just be like, my first internship was on Music Row. But ended up meeting with them. It went great. I was kind of doing more of like the digital side stuff with them. Using kind of like my Adobe, the Premiere Pro, Photoshop, social media stuff with them, but was able to learn a lot about kind of just the publishing world and also meet some good mentors over there. I still kind of keep in touch with that team and, yeah, I've been in touch with them now, setting up rights with people that I work with. And so it was really cool.
And then also when we had lunch the other day, you talked about before you kind of had all this stuff happen, you were working with some artists. You kind of picked up a management role.
Mm-hmm. And that was actually after MV2.
Okay.
So after MV2, I went over to Homestead, and Homestead is that Sam Hunt, Dustin Lynch, Connor Smith, and now they have Madeline Merlot. That's their management house, and that was right across the street from MV2. So I was at MV2, and I was like, it's right there. Like, that's where I need to be. So ended up kind of weaseling my way over there into that internship for that one fall. And kind of during there, I was honestly just a fly on the wall. I was like, I just want to listen and hear what you guys do and soak in as much as I can. But at the same time, it was like, how do I get into this management thing? Like, what do I need to be doing right now to where I can make this a possibility? And I was kind of having those questions probably like once a week of just like, what do you do with this? Like, how should I go about this? And one of the times I'd asked Chelsea, and she just goes, just start doing it. Like, it was like every question I was asking, that's like all I needed to hear from someone was just like, just start. Yeah. Like, find people that you like and just start managing. And I was like, okay. So didn't really have an idea of what management was, but I knew it was like One of my other people who I had reached out to when I moved to town and got to talk to was Ryan Kroon. And now he has What's Good projects with like Palmer Anthony and Clayton Mullins and some other guys. But he was just like, management is essentially doing whatever you need to do to make your artists bigger. You don't have to know how to do everything, but you got to know where to find how to do everything. And so it was kind of all these pieces of knowledge that I got from some of the people that I talked to coming up of just, you know, you just got to start and figure it out. And but I was down in Murfreesboro and ended up meeting a buddy who, through my sister, he was a patient of my sister, actually, and found out that him and his brother were in this old contemporary Christian group called Mass Anthem. And they were very successful. They did really well. I think during like the whole Facebook video boom through like the 2016, 2017, 2018. So they did really well. And then they kind of wanted to pivot and go into the pop world, had done that. And that was during 2020 when everything shut down. So that kind of broke them a little bit of what they wanted to put out and what they wanted to do. So I ended up working with them and I told them, I was like, hey, let's do your guys' pop thing. But I know you guys kind of want to dip into this alternative side a little bit more and make the music you want to make. And I want to start managing. I think if I could get you two, just you two, I don't want any other guys. Like, let's just focus on what you guys want to do. I'd love to help out in any way. And they were like, all right. So after a couple of months, they kind of agreed. And so we started with just kind of the branding and doing the photo shoots and got their Instagram rolling and was kind of shooting more content and finding them the producers that they were going to be recording with and just started doing all the things. And it's kind of fun. I still work with them. I think they both have families and things now, so they've slowed down a little bit, but it was just a lot of fun to kind of figure out and everything that really goes on behind the scenes of an artist's kind of lifespan. There's so many things. Like before you get a pub deal, before you have a label, you know, like where are we distributing our music? There's so many like independent distributors when it comes to like DistroKid or TuneCore, or when you get to like AWOL, and there's just so many different avenues to go about doing certain things. So I was doing a lot of their publishing and, you know, making their lyric sheets just in case we needed it, setting them up a song trust and sound exchange and, you know, kind of learning along the way of everything that goes into starting an artist and building an artist. But yeah, I worked with them and then kind of slowly worked my way into the countryside. And now I've been working with Daniel Jeffers for a little bit. And yeah, kind of just built my management into, I think I knew, after being at Homestead, I knew I wanted to be in management. It was one of the things that was always in the back of my mind. So even at WME, I was learning a ton about the live music industry and what it all goes into that. But I was still always doing stuff either after work or like on my breaks. I was working on either artwork or I'm trying to even think like just random stuff for my side artists and what I was doing. But there were a lot of times during my WME days where people would be like, what do you do for fun? Like, what do you do? Like, what are your hobbies? And I was like, I work out, but usually after work, it's like, I'll go home and work on more music stuff for like my artists.
There's no office hours in this business. Mm-mm. You can unlock a door at 9 a.m. and lock it back up at 5. But when you wake up, you're working.
Yep.
And right after you lock that door and you get home, you're still working. Like, you're still on the clock. I mean, I get emails at 1 a.m. on a Friday, or I guess a Saturday at that point.
Yeah.
But it's like people are just working all the time. I'm just like, you have no choice. You have to answer the email. It's not like, oh, let me wait till Monday.
Right.
Especially when you're at like kind of like my level or your level where we're still like, we're somewhere.
Yeah.
But we're still working our way up to the top.
Right.
So there really are no office hours. But so I want to ask you, I had a meeting the other day. Someone asked me how do I get into the business? I mean, they write songs, but how do I get into the business is such a tough question.
It's a massive question.
It's like, I can answer that in so many ways, but I told them the best way to get in and to learn is you're going to have to build your resume to get hired by somebody. If you don't have a music business degree,
mm-hmm.
which they didn't,
yep.
you're going to need to build your resume and learn things. I said, so pick up an artist. Find an artist you believe in
yep.
and
just start.
And just start managing them. That's yep. how I did it. You know,
because you can take that experience into any interview.
Yeah.
And those people are going to ask you and be like, what experience do you have?
Mm-hmm.
And although it's not, I would say, a real job or like a real position, it's like, it's things that you've worked on and that people in the industry definitely put into account when they're interviewing you. I mean, if I was, the music industry is so laissez-faire when it comes to just where you get your experience, how you yeah. do it. That's why I kind of say LinkedIn is a little weird just because mm-hmm. it's not really used in the music industry.
That's because people think it's so professional. I have a LinkedIn and I love using it.
Yeah.
Like I do use it a lot. I don't reach out to people, but I'll connect just so people kind of know my name.
Mm-hmm.
People will see it and they'll maybe be like, oh, who's this? Look at my profile and see all the stuff I do and I've done.
Yeah.
Which could help because, you know, my name's in the back of their head. But I wanted to ask you the booking side of things, like WME and mm-hmm. the CAAs and all that. You know, there's a lot of entry-level positions.
Yep.
What's your opinion on, like you had said, there's all these different levels up to the floaters, to the assistants and whatnot. Do you think that someone just trying to get into the business that has no prior experience, would it be in their best interest maybe to get a mailroom job?
Yeah,
or
I mean,
and work their way up, or
so one of the ways. I mean, how I got into it was, I had been in touch with an assistant, who's now an agent, but at the time, just staying in contact with him, and was like, trying to learn as much from him, getting coffees, doing that kind of thing. But he was able to reach out and be like, "Hey, let me know when your graduation is, because we're looking for help, honestly," and. It was just, I think having that relationship is massive. If you're trying to get in, reach out to those assistants, like go on maybe LinkedIn or, you know, try to search and find an assistant at WME and just be like, hey, I would love to at some point get into the agency side, or I'm trying to dip my foot into the music industry. Can you let me know if you guys are hiring, or what can I use you as a reference? Would you want to grab coffee? That kind of thing, I think, is huge. But yeah, I mean, even in our floater classes, so those are the people coming in. I think even in my floater class, there was a girl who did communications, and had really had no idea any, like, the verticals. I think the verticals of the industry are, I think, so important to know. And they were kind of oblivious to, like, each vertical, whether it's agency, label, publishing, and how everything kind of connects. So I think there is an upper hand in having a music business degree. It's not necessary to get into certain companies within the music industry. And I mean, they're still there now. But what was the other one? I think it was like journalism, and the other one was like communications, and they were able to get in. So yeah, I think it's definitely possible, but I think if you can have a connection within that company, it helps a lot. Definitely helps you within the interview process, because they're going off someone that already works there, who they know, that they have trust in, and they can kind of go, if you believe in this person, we'll bring them on right. if you think they're a good fit. And
I've seen that happen at WME
with yeah,
Ryan.
Yeah, Hofstadter.
Yeah, because he built his resume up.
Yep.
And had done the management thing yep. by managing.
Shout out Huff as well.
Yeah. Love that dude. but yeah, he just was managing
mm-hmm.
artists and kind of doing his thing. And then just.
He was on the road too, wasn't he? He was running around.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember he actually, he called me one time. This was beginning of 2023. I was like, hey dude, are you free to go on the road with Parmalee? I was just like,
you're like, when, where?
Yeah, I was like, how? Well, I've never done a bus run in my life.
Yeah.
So I don't know how that's going to go. So I was like, I can't.
Did you end up doing it?
No, I couldn't.
Okay.
I had other stuff going on. I was like, I was out of town for a little bit. We had some stuff going on. I just yeah. couldn't swing it. But they ended up going and playing right near my hometown for something, okay. which was cool. But
yeah. No, there was a bus run that I did with Connor Connor Smith, and we went down to Florida and then Savannah, Georgia. And I think that was one of the experiences where I was like, oh yeah, I don't think the road life is at all for me.
Yeah.
I give props to artists and their bandmates for doing what they do day in and day out when they have shows all the time. And are like, there's people like Lainey Wilson where she was on the road last year, over 300 days out of the year, probably like 330 days out of the year. And I think there's that, she said herself that she slept in her bed like 17 days or something like that. I think like that is insane to me. I'm one where my sister lives in Murfreesboro. I live in West Nashville, and I will leave her house to come sleep in my bed, even if I'm just like hanging out there for the weekend. I'm like, I need to be in like my home, my space. Granted, now that I'm with Matt, there's probably going to be some traveling that goes along with it, but I'm also excited for that. So
I think with management, because so obviously Matt being a decent sized artist that could probably sell some tickets, if not right now, within the next year,
right?
Some big hard ticketed venues, but so he'll have a tour manager.
Mm-hmm.
But the cool thing with management, at least for me, is I get to pick and choose what I go to. And so my brother's 20, and he plays college baseball at Daytona State College. It's JUCO in Daytona Beach, Florida. And he wants to be in the music business, so we're trying to get him up. He's trying to play at Belmont next year.
Okay.
But I kind of wanted him to, he has no experience in the business other than what he's seen me do.
Yeah.
So Hunter Hayes played last night with Ella Langley in Sanford, Florida, which is only like 45 minutes from my brother.
Yeah, you were there. Did you just get into... Oh, okay.
No, so I posted that video because my brother sent that to me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I just wanted to post it.
Gotcha.
But yeah, he was... I looped him in with the, like, Ella's team and the buyers and all that, like, the venue owners and all that stuff so he could kind of see how it works.
Like, figure it out.
Yeah, and then he went and acted as, like, Hayes' manager / tour manager.
Mm-hmm.
And I made this itinerary, like everything he needed to know, so he could kind of like do it.
Follow along.
He texted me and was like, dude, I love this shit. And so he was, shout out to Chase Butler, one of the best dudes I know in town. He tour manages Ella Langley. He was with Tyler Braden for a while, Lainey Wilson. But
that's how I know his name.
Yeah.
Tyler Braden, because Tyler Braden's a WME guy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I used to send a lot of the advanced stuff to Chase.
Yeah.
That would make sense.
He's such a good dude.
Yeah.
But I told him the situation of like my brother and stuff. He was like, hell yeah, dude. Like, I'll help however I need. Like, he can follow me around, shadow me.
Yeah.
Because he was on my podcast, I think for like the third or fourth episode.
Okay.
And that's the same. He had the same situation. He shadowed somebody when he was learning.
Yeah.
So my brother was like, dude, I think I could be on the road.
Yeah.
He's like, I want to do what Chase does. I was like, well, Preston, you know, you kind of, this was your first time seeing it.
Yeah.
You know, you haven't really lived it yet.
Right. Even when I got to town, I was like, maybe I should like be in tour management. I mean, there's so many different avenues that you can take. And one, I'm glad it didn't happen because that would be insane. But there's a lot of people you meet that they're like, yeah, I mean, I did my year or two on the road. And that's kind of how I got my connections. I think that's how Sam Hunt's manager, Brad, he kind of made his way. But he was more of the videography content style. But he was out on the road for some time, and that's how he built his connections around Nashville to where he could kind of be in that management position.
Right.
But yeah, I'm just glad I was like, I didn't have to put in that year or two of like just constantly on the road. That it sounds insane, but good luck to your brother. I think having someone like you in his corner is huge. But it's a grind for sure.
I told him, I was like, maybe you could do it. Like, I mean, Churro, I've known a bunch of people that have been on the road because Churro toured with Morgan Wallen and then got married and bought a house and then came off the road and was like, I'm just going to stick to management. Now he's with Ben Chapman, Meg McCree with
I love Mandolin. Meg McCree. Yeah.
But
is that Red Light?
Red Light. Yeah. Because Mandolin manages Lainey too.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I was like, dude, you could just do it for like a year or two and kind of just learn
and
then go do something else.
Right.
But yeah, so going back to WME,
booking.
Can you, for the people that don't necessarily understand the business as much and what booking is, can you just real quick explain what booking is when you're an agent,
yep.
and then what an assistant does.
Okay. So basically, what an agent does is they're going to be the people who are reaching out to the buyers. A lot of the times there's going to be third-party buyers, or the buyer may just be the venue owner. They're the people who are going to be reaching out to us. I mean, it can go both ways, whether they reach out to WME to like find an act to bring in, or we have a artist that was routing down to a certain location where we'll reach out and look for availability and things like that. But a lot of what the agent will do is kind of give that tentative routing for certain tours. They're going to be the ones who are mostly reaching out to the buyers and negotiating all the deals. Depending on the level of the act, they can be negotiated different ways and structured differently. And I don't think there's any specific structure that you can't negotiate. So a lot of them have knowledge on all the different ways that you can structure a deal that can make your artist the most money, or that is good for both the buyer and for the artist. So a lot of the times they'll end up working with them, getting the offer from the buyer. And then usually from then on, that's kind of where the assistant comes into play and where I did a lot of my work. And that's getting the offer. You're entering the offer into our system, or I say our, but the WME system. Yeah. And from there, then you kind of end up drafting up the deal memo. And that's usually what you send to the artist teams then. So then you're working with the management saying, here's the deal. Here's all the terms. Whether you have like your production's covered, you have catering, you have a hotel room or two, anything like that, that maybe an artist specifically asks for and wants on each show. So then the management will kind of be like, all right, cool. Either yes, no, the deal, get back to us. And then we'll go ahead and, I mean, even kind of before you send it to management, you're working, we'll go back to the buyers and be like, can we get this deal point? Can we get this deal point? So you get the offer, kind of negotiate some of the points that the artist has, draft up the deal memo, send that deal memo to management. Management will either confirm or reject.
So management makes the executive decision, not the agent.
Yep.
Gotcha.
They're just the ones who are going to bring you the offers or find you the offers. And then management will say either yes or no. And then we kind of go from there. And usually a lot of the agents will have routing figured out where they kind of know, like some of them are very, very, I mean, all of them are very, very smart when it comes to routing tours, because I mean, you're working through how many artists, how many country artists from how many different agencies trying to get into a lot of the same venues in the same cities. So there's different holds and things like that, that they're working around constantly, trying to route things that make sense where you're not doing overdrives or essentially anything over 500 miles going from city to city that an artist is in a van hoping that it's only like 200 miles rather than 480. I think most of it is the agents doing a lot of the kind of hunting, gathering. And then when you're an assistant, you're doing a lot of the back end work and making sure it's all kind of tied and zipped up and here's it all wrapped together so that management can go yes or no. And then once the deal is confirmed or something like that, where it's confirmed, then you're handling a lot of the admin side. So then, all right, so now we got to issue the contract. Once you get the contract back, then you need to send, like you'll issue that to the buyer. The buyer will send back kind of their edits and things that maybe they agree with or don't agree with on the contract. Then we send that to management and management goes, we agree with everything on the contract that they marked up, or we don't like that they marked this off. So now we got to send back edits and then they'll sign it. And so you're kind of the middleman between buyers and management, making sure that everything contract wise and paperwork wise is being handled, or deposits. When you kind of get to the point where you need a certain percentage for the artist to even say yes to the show, or a certain amount of time out from the show, you need a certain deposit in. So the assistant will make sure that they're reaching out to the buyers to be like, hey, where's this money? We need this in now. So it's a lot, and it's also kind of, I don't know how it is at CIA or UTA. I can only speak from WME side, and hopefully I'm not giving away too many WME secrets, but a lot of it's broken up by like territory and things like that.
Because you were the Southeast, right? It's Southeast and Canadian regions?
Yes. Is that right? So I only did Canada for a few weeks. That was kind of just throughout the early part of this year when I was on my way out. But I did Southeast for about 10 months, and that was all the seven states from like North Carolina down to Florida, and then all the way over to Louisiana, I think I had. And then, so the work, the volume that was going on in that territory was a lot, just because it's a massive market.
Well, SEC.
Yeah.
That's like the South. It's like where country music thrives the most. It's
where country is. So anyone, whether they're a small artist on the WME roster or they're a massive artist, you're kind of booking anyone who can. I was booking anyone who can sell about 2,000 to 2,500 tickets down to who can sell 100 tickets.
Yeah.
And you're booking the venues in seven states for that many artists. So it was a lot of offers, lots of deals, learned a lot. I had a really cool agent at the time, and he taught me a lot about just like making sure the paperwork was correct and, you know, like kind of taking pride in your work. Like, if there's a issue with the paperwork and it's noticed later, like that looks bad on us. And as the agent and assistant, it's a team kind of a thing. And he was really good about that, of just being like, hey, if you mess up, like I mess up, it's on both of us. So that was really cool to have him, kind of be the first, he was the first desk I was on. So, he went from having, I think four states, and it was still the Southeast, but he ended up picking up three more right when I first hopped on the desk. So I was like learning how to manage four states of work, adding three more states of volume on top of that, and then having to transition with the other territorial who was booking those three states on like crossing everything over, making sure there was a smooth transition. So it was fun. Learned so much. I think it was easier kind of now being in management, having agency experience.
Yeah. 100%.
We worked with them so frequently.
Well, and just like the, as an independent, well, at least for me, I know you're not independent management anymore, but I guess, but the booking side is the hardest part, because like both artists that I work with don't have agents yet, fingers crossed down the road.
Yep.
But they make money off shows.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm the one having to send those emails and building those relationships with buyers and stuff. It does help.
Yeah.
It's something that I wish I had. But so you booked for, assisted in booking for Jason Aldean,
mm-hmm.
Charles Wesley Godwin,
mm-hmm.
Connor Smith, Brian Martin, Boy Named Banjo. Is there anyone else I'm missing?
Chase McDaniel. You could probably throw like Bart Crow on there. I mean, like there's some smaller guys, but, I think those two, Leah Marie Mason, she was on there a little bit. Yeah. I think that's probably it. But yeah, cool. So I had one agent. So my first agent, that was Alex Collian, and he's the one who has like Connor and, mm-hmm. Boy Named Banjo. So you're kind of working with those teams closely, and especially like you're working with those managers or those tour managers. A lot of the people on those teams, you're working with them specifically. And that was, I think, the cool part about getting to be on Kevin Neal's desk, is when you are under someone who reps someone like a Jason Aldean. One, it's cool. You're like, heck yeah, this is sweet. But two, you get to, you know, kind of listen in on conversations and see how those type of people maneuver and how they operate. And you get to work with like Jason Aldean's management and kind of see how those massive tours are routed, how we go about getting support and all that kind of stuff. So it was really fun to just be a part of.
Cool. Yeah, it's awesome to hear the booking side of things, because mm-hmm. I think you're the first person that I've had on the podcast that does booking
experience.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah,
because I've been needing it. I've been needing publishing and booking. I just had JD Groover on last episode.
Yep.
And then you.
Yeah.
And then I have somebody coming on here shortly from the Neal agency.
Okay.
Which kind of is because you worked with Kevin Neal,
yep.
who is his son, Austin, correct?
Austin's, yep.
Is that his son?
Yep.
Who started the Neal Agency,
yep.
which has Morgan,
Hardy. Ernest.
Yeah. My Hardy. Buddy, Aiden Canfield. Shout out, Aiden.
Yep. They're growing well over there. And yeah, that was kind of another thing is like I would get a lot of emails from either externally or, I mean, internally of, hey, Kevin's office, can I get me plus three tickets to the Morgan Wallen? And he was like, no, stop asking. He's one of those where any kind of those people, not necessarily looking for handouts because they are maybe industry people, but anyone that was really reaching out just to get some tickets without paying, trying to go through him instead of the Neal Agency, he's like, no.
Yeah.
Like, leave me alone. So
yeah,
it was funny.
But so transitioning to the management thing, now you're back in it.
Mm-hmm.
Just got a new job at Extended Play Music Group,
mm-hmm.
working with Matt Schuster. Yep. What's that been like for you?
It's been great. I mean, his manager, Eric, is an awesome dude. He was, when he reached out, I mean, I was just super excited because we had gotten into the part of the year in December. I mean, half the industry shuts down. You go into winter mm-hmm. break and it was just during that time where I was like, I see you guys are needing some help. Like, let me reach out. And then he responded within 30 minutes of like my email being like, hey, let's hop on a phone call. And I was like, great. And kind of took a couple meetings with him. And he's got one other guy who is out on the road right now. His name's Joey. And he's with an artist, Noah Florsch. And he's on a 6-week run right now. So he was doing day-to-day for Matt. And he had to now go do this thing with his artist that he's kind of brought on and under his wing. And they were like, we just need some help on Matt's side. Eric has another artist, Miles Smith, who's a rocket ship right now, just out of the UK. And is, I think, currently at 6 million monthly listeners of just, he's blowing up and it's kind of insane. And so Eric's just been really busy balancing everybody, especially with everything that's going on. So he reached out and I was like, just kind of a big fan of what Matt was doing. Again, like when I moved here, so in 2021, I'd heard Haunted House by Matt Schuster and was like, this kid's good. This is the only song I know by him, but and I think at the time he maybe had like four more songs out. So he was very fresh. And when I started at WME, he was like on taking meetings and you walk in the doors and it says like WME welcomes Matt Schuster. And I'm like, oh, this would be sick if he ended up working here or being a client here and ended up signing with WME. So I've kind of almost been along for this whole process to where when the position opened up, I was like, this would be like a full circle thing of me getting to work with Matt. And he's still a youngin'. He's 23 and still learning a lot, but has all the pieces together of publishing, label, agency. And now we're just kind of working on ways that we can build on having those pieces all together, which is, I think, the fun part. And you're able to kind of just on the personal side, figure out what it is of what he wants his sound to be and where, what connections I can bring in to kind of facilitate that and then work with Eric on everything else. And he's just, I mean, Eric himself is a NYU law grad. So he comes mm-hmm. with a lot of like the experience of deals and contracts and how yeah. to go about those, and then is just very well connected. So I think it's cool because I don't know if there's this dude named Tiags who is massive on TikTok. I think he's the one who's like, my name's Tiago. Like he had like four or five just like massive TikTok songs throughout 2020, 2021, and he was like managing him. And so he has like these pop connections through all the labels of like New York and LA.
Mm-hmm.
But then ended up finding Matt and, you know, kind of dipping into this country world where, not that he doesn't have a lot of experience, I think Nashville maybe is just a different world and he doesn't necessarily have the bandwidth to be like, who's all up and coming in Nashville and who's all the, like, what's going on in Nashville, to where I'm able to kind of fill that piece.
Right.
Especially coming from the booking side, I think as Matt prepares for more shows, it helps having someone who's been on that end mm-hmm. to where I mean, we've even talked and like, yeah, you can negotiate this. Like you can negotiate this. So it's just, there's pieces where I think work well with both of us. And I'm excited to see like what we can do and what we can build. It's been a lot of fun so far, but I think we're only about a month in, but it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. It's awesome. I'm a huge fan of his stuff.
Yeah.
I remember when, If I Was a Cowboy came out,
mm-hmm.
such a banger.
Yeah.
Real quick before we kind of wrap up, can you explain the difference between the manager, which, it's like, I mean, that's a general question, but, and then a day-to-day manager. Cause some people don't know that there is a difference between the actual artist manager and then the day-to-day.
Yeah. There is a difference. I don't think there's much of a difference. It's more when you get to a position where you have 2, 3, and then maybe at the point where you have 4 or 5 artists that are doing really well, but you've brought all them on, you can start hiring people to come in and just start helping lead kind of that day-to-day process, whether it's you're working with so many teams, whether it's, hey, the publishing has a write scheduled with these people and he needs to be here at this time, or the label's sending you like certain artwork that they want for the EP. And when you have all this stuff going on, or just, hey, there's meetings with this label to go over this rollout plan. There's so much going on when you have 2 or 3 guys doing that.
Right.
That a day-to-day will kind of just support the manager and be like, hey, what is it that either you can't get to or that I need to be on? Certain scheduling things of, Matt's been doing a lot of content stuff, gearing up for kind of a busy summer and a busy fall. So we're just, it's a lot of scheduling, trying to work with the labels, work with the publishers, make sure that everything is running smoothly. When the manager can't be there, I think is the main thing. But also, I think a lot of the times, like the manager, you can pick and choose what you go do. The day-to-day, it's kind of important for them, especially during these younger, I think, years of an artist's career, because you're able to go on the road and maybe act as like the tour manager, or you can handle some of those responsibilities that maybe you don't want to go out and pay for yet when they're not making enough money to like afford a tour manager or a production manager or things like that. So I think that's probably the main difference, is just you're there when the manager can't be for answers that need to be answered at a certain time. So, and I guess that's some of the stuff I've been figuring out too the last month, is what does a day to day kind of do?
Yeah.
And what do you need me on, and where do I, like, I can be wherever you need me to be, sort of a thing. So it's been an interesting past few weeks of just kind of seeing what I can get my hands on and what I can be involved with. But yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Well, congrats on that.
Thank you.
It's a big step.
Yeah.
So what do you think your advice would be to somebody who's trying to get in the business? Don't say networking, because we've already gone over networking.
Go to Live Oak and Red Door.
And every single person I ask says networking. Some have given different answers, but networking is a common theme. So something other than networking,
I would say you need to find a way to become someone that just provides value. Like you mentioned, Swiss Army Knife. I'm still running into it now. I mean, me and Eric were talking last night and I was just explaining how it's like, I've done so much, whether it be video editing in the Adobe space, of just like creating things and actually making things look good, at least good enough that it can be presented to an audience or a fan base. So like just learning extra skills of anything. I can run Facebook and Instagram ads, TikTok, like I know how to do all that from the back end. And there's a lot of things where it may sound easy, but once you start diving into it, there's a learning curve.
Yeah.
But making yourself valuable in that way of like, hey, we don't have to outsource this. I can do this. Like we don't have to outsource marketing, cause I can do that. And I think like when you're in those interviews and talking with those people or certain mentors, they'll tell you of like, go do that. Or like, if you feel like you want to learn a skill, go do it. And especially if you're younger, you have so much time in your 20s. Like, a lot of the kids coming into WME as floaters and trying to work their way up are 22, 23, fresh out of college. And there's so much pressure on them, hearing them talk about, like, I can't believe I'm not doing this yet. I'm not doing this yet. And I'm like, you are 23 years old. Like, I moved to town when I was 24. And I've been here 4 years. So I'm 28 now. And now just getting to the point where I'm like, okay, some of the fruits of my labor are paying off. But yeah, so if you're in your early 20s, you've got time, try everything, learn as much as you can, build your skill set in as many different avenues as you can. And that way, when it comes to a point where people are interested in hiring you, you have the tools that you can help them in any way possible.
Yeah.
But I would say that's the main thing. Just build your skill set.
Yeah, it's huge.
It's going to be massive.
I started doing this fully when I was 22. Mm-hmm. I was freshly 22 when I started, still in college. And now I just turned 24, just finished college.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I'm still like kind of in that learning of like, I want it to happen now. I want everything now. But it's like,
everyone does at that age.
Everything slowly starts to like
piece
together.
Yeah.
Little wins start to build up and build up and build up.
Right.
But yeah, I think that that's good advice outside of the networking.
Yeah. I think that's something too, around like 26, 27. You're like, you know what? Like, I'm okay with the speed at which things are going, because I know, like, when you have that goal and when you have that mindset that you're just going to reach that goal, it doesn't matter the time it takes to get there. Cause again, you said little wins, those kind of things keep you going.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah. Yeah. Appreciate you having me on.
Do you want to plug your socials or Matt's socials or anything, if you know his off the top of your head?
Yeah, I mean, if you just search Matt Schuster on anything, I mean, it'll pop up, because that dude's killing it right now. I think I'm Real Sean McHenry on Instagram.
I'll tag it. It'll be tagged in our Instagram, and I think probably in our Spotify description.
Yeah, I think that was one of those things I changed during high school. I was like, if I change it to Real Sean McHenry, like, that'll make me want to be something someday, so that no one can ever like take my name. So that's stupid, but yeah, my Instagram, Real Sean McHenry. That's kind of the only important place I think you should keep up with me.
Not LinkedIn.
You can. I'm not on there much. And then
no, your LinkedIn looks good. I stalked the shit out of it the other day. That's how I got this.
Yeah, I try to keep it updated, but I don't. Yeah. I don't go on there to read anything or do anything. It's more just keeping my profile looking okay.
Yeah. Well, you can hit me up on LinkedIn. I love LinkedIn. I'm on that shit all the time. But yeah, so thank y'all for listening to another episode of Behind the Music Biz. Thanks to our guest, Sean McHenry.
Thank you.
You come back next Tuesday for episode 17. You can check out more from Raised Rowdy at raisedrowdy.com. And on Instagram at Raised Rowdy. And then you can check out the podcast on Instagram at Behind the Music Biz. I'm your host, Peyton Heben, and this has been Behind the Music Biz.